Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into the NFL Free For All Show, brought to you by the Sports City Chefs. I'm your host, Brian Hughes. I do have a couple great guests this evening. Tonight we have a very special show. It's a one-hour show, basically to talk about the first ever virtual draft. Nobody was at Radio City Music Hall. Nobody was in Vegas, as per what was expected to happen. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to give you an overview of your teams. I've gotten a ton of feedback. We're going to keep it very high level. We're not going to get into to the super nuts and bolts, because I know a lot of you fans have mentioned that. So we are going to get into that, but I do want to bring in the two gentlemen that are going to be joining me here tonight discussing football. First and foremost, I want to bring in my boy, Mr. James Greenwood. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Brian, man. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. And then we also have, see, you're my boy, and then we also have your boy, Sirius. How you doing tonight, Sirius?
You know, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys, man.
Well, listen, I want to keep this fast and moving, because that's what the fans have told me they wanted. So I'm going to ask you guys each the same question, because I think, being that we've had the draft, I want to say about 70 years now, and this being the first virtual one, as a fan and also somebody who really studies the NFL, James, I'm going to throw this to you first. What was your thoughts of the virtual draft? Was it smooth? Did you see any issues? Were you surprised at anything in particular, or do you see this as potentially something moving forward we could see more of? Because I know more than one coach said, hey, you know what, it actually works out pretty well. So what's your thoughts?
So the virtual draft went with very few hiccups. Everybody had their tech teams a go and ready. I saw the conspiracy theory that the Cincinnati Bengals took the full time on the at the top of the draft just to make sure everybody else was ready to go. But I think the big thing is not necessarily the draft itself. The biggest thing was in the process. The process was completely different as well. Person interviews. No pro days, with the exception of a couple in the first couple of months in the draft season. So they were basically relying on the tape. And what we're going to see is, a couple years from now, this being a case study as to what's the best way to conduct drafts in the future.
It's a good point. Sirius, James kind of gave his two cents. What was your thoughts? As a fan, how was it visually to you, as opposed to – to seeing all the fans there, like, did you feel that the experience lacked or was better? What's your thoughts?
You know, actually, I hated it from a fan perspective. I understand the reason as to why we went virtual. I understand that, you know, the teams and the coaches and the scouts did the best that they could. But if I'm a fan of a team, if I'm a player looking to be drafted, you want to be able to walk across that stage, hear your name called, grab your ball cap, shake the commissioner's hand, get the picture, do the interview with, you know, the different media outlets after being drafted. And due to the situation that we're currently in as a country, that was stripped away from these young men. I mean, as a guy who's been to a draft and sat there amongst the fans and been a part of the fan experience, again, it lacked that for me. You know, as far as the other part of the question, you know, did it go off without a hitch? I mean, yeah, it went off without a hitch and everything like that. But as a fan, it just lacked that, you know, fan interaction. And I felt for the young men who never will get this moment back.
Yeah, you know what, and I'm going to keep my opinion brief as well, guys. I kind of tend to agree with Sirius. There's something about the draft when you see, you know, 85 Raiders fans there and there's a, you know, a stud quarterback on the board and Goodell calls for, you know, the third best catcher or the third best center, and all of a sudden everybody was like, what? And they're like freaking out and they're booing. You know, it is different. But I will tell you, and you know, obviously everybody who listens to the show, and you guys as well, know I'm a Niners fan. But I kind of thought that this was pretty cool. So in his interview, first-round wide receiver Brandon Ayuk was asked, hey, do you feel like you were kind of robbed, if you were, as far as not being able to walk across that stage as a first-round pick? And, you know, and be able to shake Roger Goodell's hand and hold up the jersey. And he said, well, I'll be able to do all that when I become a Hall of Famer, which I get it. You know, you like the swag or the cockiness, you know, it definitely was different. Make no mistake about it. But I got to tell you guys, I was ultimately pretty impressed. Sirius, I'm going to come to you first. And I know that this is kind of trial by fire here, so I'm going to go ahead and try and set you guys up as best as I can. So we're going to start with the AFC East, and we're going to talk particularly about the Miami Dolphins, who is picking the highest among those teams. Miami had several picks, guys, and I don't think any need was bigger than potentially quarterback and potentially an offensive lineman to protect that quarterback. Seeing as how they traded Laremy Tunsil to Houston. So, you know, they had some other needs, you know, playmaking wide receiver. You know, they had traded so many pieces. Minkah Fitzpatrick, as you know, Sirius, hell of a player. He was traded from the Dolphins to the Steelers. So what exactly did Miami do in the draft? Well, I think that Miami did pretty well, but let me go ahead and give it to you, and you tell me what you think. I'm going to go ahead and just simply name off their selections, just the top three rounds, and then you tell me, do you see impact, guys? So round one, number five overall, they selected Tua Tagovailoa. They did have three first-round picks, which obviously makes everything look a little bit better. At number 18, they came back and got Austin Jackson, the very agile tackle from USC. Noah Igbinoghu, and I know I messed that name up. I apologize. Quarterback from Auburn. Round two, they had two picks. They took Robert Hunt, tackle from Louisiana, and Raekwon Davis, a big, big defensive tackle from Alabama. And then they took Brandon Jones, a safety from Texas, in round three. Ultimately, what's your thoughts on what the Miami Dolphins did? They did come away with, I think this is at least worth noting, they also came away with Matt Breida from the San Francisco 49ers. They traded a fifth-round pick for him. So they did secure a you know, pretty solid running back. What's your thoughts, Sirius?
You know, honestly, man, I felt that the Miami Dolphins did very, very well. All signs indicated that they were going to, quote-unquote, have to, you know, move off of one of those first-round draft picks to jump up and get their quarterback. We talked about it at length on previous shows about how, you know, is that, you know, smoke and mirrors? Are they trying to drive a team or something like that? They actually stayed right where they were supposed to stay, got their guy, came back later on that round, got an offensive tackle to protect that guy, and then went on and solidified a defensive of me at the cornerback position with Noah from the guy from Auburn, who in my opinion, could have probably went significantly higher in the draft. In round two, like you alluded to, they went ahead and went offensive lineman again with Robert Hunt, which is a guy that I wanted the Steelers to kind of maneuver to try to go get. Then they picked up a defensive tackle. So all things considered, man, I think the Miami Dolphins did significantly well. I did want them to, if I was going to make any type of change, I really wanted them to really solidify that wide receiver position, get another target, get somebody for Tua Tagovailoa to throw the ball to, that can kind of grow and mold with them. But all things considered, I think the Miami Dolphins did a very good job and have a tremendous haul. Again, when you go to add in Matt Breida coming over from the 49ers, I think that did very, very well. They did pick up a wide receiver in the seventh round, a dude named Malcolm Perry out of Navy, but I think they really could have addressed that need significantly earlier on in the draft. But all in all, very good.
Yeah, James, I'm going to hit you up, let you kind of hit this real quick, and then we do have a couple more chefs to bring in the building, and then I'll probably just give you guys each a team to talk about so we can kind of get through all this. James, what's your thoughts on Miami's draft as a whole? Obviously, they had a ton of pick, but that's basically because they got rid of a lot of talent.
Exactly. This this draft screams opportunity cost.
Like, they did the absolute
best thing possible, and that is stand pat and let Tua fall to them. They were not scared into – and usually a team with a lot of draft capital takes that draft capital and maneuvers around the draft. They stand pat when they should have at number five, but they didn't – and they still stand pat when they shouldn't have, and that was with pick 18. Tristan Wirfs was only a few picks away. They could have moved up with San Francisco instead of Tampa Bay and secured who I think is a much better prospect and Tristan Wirfs. Instead, they had to settle for Austin Jackson, who I think is a tier below Tristan Wirfs. I do like Hunt. He's going to start right away at guard. And I also think that in the fourth round, Solomon Kindley might also jump into the starting lineup for Miami. Other than that, everything else was just pretty meh. Like, there's probably another starter in there, but for what they gave up a very good safety. They gave up a well above average offensive tackle. And all they got to show for it is probably four starters, maybe five. When it could have been so much more than that, I think they missed a lot of opportunities. It looks great on paper because they got a lot of picks and they added a lot of talent from where they were a year ago. But a year ago, with everything done, they were one of the worst teams in football. And this helped, but not as much as people think.
Yeah, and you know what, James? I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's a lot of it's preference. You know, because I'll be just in complete transparency. I like Tristan Wirfs, but I think Austin Jackson's actually a better left tackle prospect. I don't think he's as polished as Wirfs is right now, but I think Austin Jackson is much more laterally quick, and I think he's got better feet. I think he's going to make a better offense. I think he'll make a better left tackle of the future. But if you're judging where they're at right now and who can help immediately, you know, that's definitely something to consider. But let me bring in Mr. TP Timeless. He's been waiting patiently. Matt, I'm going to be right with you. Mr. TP Timeless, how you doing tonight?
Took off my blazer and loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. I feel some type of way. I'm ready to talk about everybody's draft except the Lions. I do not want to talk about Michigan at all. I want to leave the mitten alone. But I'm ready. How are you, big fella?
We're doing fantastic. Ty, what'd you think of the Detroit Lions draft?
If you want me to be technically honest, everybody's high on Detroit. They're giving them an A-minus grade. But I don't feel it was an A grade. Like, as far as an A minus, that's as far as I'll go, because I think it's A minus and A plus, so I'll give it the A minus. But, like, that's as far as I'll go. Like, I really feel like they could address more. they got a lot of running backs. Like, we already got a good stable of running backs. So it's like they could have did more needs. But I don't want to get stuck with them because, you know, I don't like Duhon and cooking because I cook soul food all night if I'm talking Detroit. So I'll leave the soul food
I'll talk barbecue in Italian. Hey, can I just say this real quick? You know that I'm not a Detroit Lions fan. Anyone that listens to the show knows that. And you're going to be shocked probably, but this, I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is the first time I can remember in the last 10 years that Detroit has drafted a running back that I thought was actually a legit three-down player in Swift. We'll see how things turn out. But
how
you guys have drafted
How long ago was Kevin out of Virginia Tech?
probably right at that cusp, but I never thought he was fantastic either.
Oh, I didn't either, but like he was a three down back. What I'm saying is that
Swift is a playmaker. I mean, I don't want to get into like totally derailing the show here, but I'm just saying Swift is a total playmaker. You could totally tell that there was such a different emphasis on this draft, and we'll get into it in a minute, but I just want to say, you look at Okuda, there's been so many times that Detroit has drafted in the top five, and rather than just make the pick that everybody in the world thinks that they should make because it's clear who the best player is as far as need, as far as team, as far as fit, and then like the Raiders, they like try to get too cute with it and they mess it up. And I just feel like if you look at the last 2 years, especially with, you know, the tight end you guys took last year, the corner this year, the running back, like, I really like what you're doing. I don't want to give you guys any bad juju, but I'm just saying, I really like what you're doing. Let me get Matt in here, though. Matt, welcome to the free-for-all. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Pretty good, fellas. How are we doing? How did we enjoy the NFL draft?
We enjoyed it, man. Right now we're talking about the different teams, and I'm gonna go ahead and put your feet right now to the fire because we're talking about the AFC East. We just went over Miami, and I'm gonna ask you about New England. I'm gonna give you New England. So New England, as per usual, did make a trade, traded out of the first round. So they had 2 seconds and 3/3. And what did they do with those picks? They got a safety named Kyle Drugger. They got a linebacker from Michigan and Josh Uche. They got a linebacker from Alabama, and I think it's Anthony Jennings. And then they got came back in round three, and they got Devin Asasi, the tight end from UCLA, and then Dalton Keene, another tight end. They doubled up on tight ends there in round three. What's your thoughts on the draft as a whole? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Do you think that this draft is going to help them to remain competitive? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, New England, they typically do pretty well on the drafts. I mean, if you look at their history, I guess they're thinking that Gronkowski was – I thought he was already retired, but I guess he's reunited with Brady. But that's probably why they drafted two tight ends to replace him. Overall, I think they did pretty good. I mean, there's a wealth of picks that you went over. Overall, I give them a B+ overall. I don't know what you guys think about the Patriots.
Ty, only because the Patriots are so polarized, and I'm going to come to you real quick. Give me your thoughts on the Patriots draft. Did they do enough to remain competitive with the Bills, and what was your thoughts on the New England Patriots draft?
My family's religious, but I'm gonna try my best. I hate to hate something, and it's like Belichick do what's necessary for this team to get the job done. He made the moves in this draft to at least keep the defense stout. I think if they can get a quarterback that's confident enough, I feel like they can exit Otis one out because Josh McDaniels has proven himself to be a good or better than good offensive coordinator. So I think the offense would be good if they could get a good showrunner. I don't believe in Stidham. But with Anthony Jennings at the linebacker position and Josh Uche from Michigan, he's a good pass rusher. So they did a good job defensively to add to one of the top two or top three defenses in the league. So you get two young bulls that bring pressure in that front seven. That's that's a home run right there. So I think the tight end, just like you said, Brian, I think they did go after the tight end position because they didn't really have that offensive cavalry like they're used to because Gronk left. So I feel like they want to see who's the best out of both worlds, kind of like what the Ravens did with Hurst and Mark Andrews last season. So I think that they are trying to see who's better or if they both work at the same time. But defensively, I think that they hit this one good.
All right, James, I'm going to come over to you. Just a quick note for the New England fans. One thing that I thought was interesting, a lot of the kind of pundits had QB and wide receiver as big-time team needs. They didn't take a tight end or a wide receiver in this draft. Shows you they have a lot of confidence in Jared Stidham from last year. And they must really like Sanu and the wide receiving core they have there, N'Keal Harry and some of those other guys. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. James, I'm going to give you the Jets. And I think the Jets are actually interesting because I think that they're – I'm going to just say one good draft away from being competitive. So what was your thoughts on the Jets? You know, they did get Mekhi Becton, probably the largest, most talked about offensive tackle from Louisville. He ran the sub 5'2", 40 at like 370 pounds, came back with Denzel Mims. Big-bodied wide receiver from Baylor. They got Ashton Davis, the safety from Cal, very athletic guy, kind of a ball hawk. Come back with Jabari Zainga, defensive end from Florida. And then they get LaMichael Perine from running back from Florida. He actually has a cousin currently playing in the NFL. What's your thoughts on the Jets? Is this team ready to compete now? What's your thoughts?
Well, no, because they weren't good enough to begin with. It's not that they drafted poorly. They actually drafted pretty well. Mekhi Becton is your height, weight, speed kind of offensive tackle. If he develops to the next level as a pass protector, he is going to be rock solid for years. If he doesn't, then he's going to be yet another offensive tackle bust in the first round. That happened a lot. Denzel Mims, I think, was a steal at pick 59, and this is a team that does not have a lot at the wide receiver position. I like Quincy Enwell a lot, but he's not a number one. Denzel Mims is, on the other hand, a number one. Those two, that significantly boosts the wide receiver prospects going on here in New York. And Ashton Davis, that leaves me a question mark. Their best player on the team is also playing at safety. What's that all about? That is to be determined. Overall, B plus grade.
All right. Yeah, very interesting. The one thing I will note about these guys, they were 7-9 last year. Here's one of those sneaky good stats. So they were 7-9 last year. And remember, they were 0-5 without Darnold under center. And anybody who watched a Jets game last year without Darnold, that might have been the most disgusting offensive performance I've ever seen in an NFL game in my entire life. They actually looked competent when he came back. So with that said, I don't know. You know what? They might be pushing for a wild card. We'll see. I'm going to come over to you, Sirius. I'm going to give you a layup. So let's look at the Buffalo Bills. They didn't have a first-round pick because Stephon Diggs is that first-round pick. Hell of a wide receiver. Come back in round two, get A.J. Esperanza, the big defensive end from Iowa. A lot of people thought he was a first-round type guy. Come back and get the big-bodied, you know, the real thick running back from Utah and Zach Moss. We'll see what that means for Frank Gore. And the only other pick that I wanted to mention is pick 167 in the fifth round. They took Jake Fromm, the quarterback from Georgia. What's your thoughts on the Buffalo Bills, and is this now the class of the AFC East?
You know, all signs look for the Buffalo Bills to take that next step and dethrone the dreaded Patriots. But honestly, man, I really wasn't too fond of watching the Buffalo Bills pick. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I do like, you know, A.J. Espinosa from Iowa. I didn't understand really the Zach Moss move, especially since they got Singletary back there, and he's a three-down back, if you ask me. So I really don't understand that move, especially so high in the draft when you could have really got another wide receiver to pair with Gabriel Davis, the guy you picked in the fourth round. The Jake Fromm move, I mean, he was sitting there, so I'm not too sure, you know, what you're going to do as far as that's concerned. Is he going to be leveraged to move at a later date? I doubt very seriously he's going to go in there and compete with a Josh Allen. So maybe that was a hold in my back pocket type of move, but I digress. And then they picked up a kicker. But I don't know if I'm ready to say the Buffalo Bills are the class of the AFC East. Their defense was stout a year ago, so I expect their defense to be stout again. And in my opinion, they really didn't address significant needs at the wide receiver position like I thought they would. So we'll see what's up with Buffalo.
All right, interesting. I think Buffalo is going to be the class of the AFC East. That's just my opinion. But I gotta swing this back around now to Ty. Ty, we're moving over to the AFC North, and we're gonna start with the Cincinnati Bengals, the team that picked the highest among these particular teams. As you know, Cincinnati was picking at the top of the draft, so it's pretty hard to mess up the first pick or two, but. Pick number one overall, they took Joe Burrow, the quarterback from LSU, came back at the top of round two and took T. Higgins, the big-bodied wide receiver from Clemson. And in the third round, they took Logan Wilson, the linebacker from Wyoming. What's your thoughts on Cincinnati? And just based off of what you're seeing out of this draft and what they have on the roster, could Cincinnati be kind of a sleeper team going into this year?
To be a sleeper team, I think they'll get – of course they'll get more wins than they had last year. I think health was a big reason on why they had a big decline. A lot of their playmakers were out with Green and Ross, both of them at least to make plays. But they went and got T. Higgins, so that's a big pickup, a guy that knows how to win coming out of Clemson. So that's pretty big as well. I didn't know much about Logan Wilson until I seen the tape during the draft and watching some of his highlights and information on YouTube, and he's a good linebacker, so at least that helps them in the seven when they're stacking that box. So that's at least good for what they could do defensively. I still feel like they will be at the bottom of the AFC North, but Joe Burrow has some huge shoes to fill because he's the number one pick, and everybody's hype off of that 1 year that he had at LSU, and he's going home to Ohio, so that's even bigger of some shoes to fill. I want to see if he can be a part of the elite quarterback situation, because that is a tough division quarterback wise. I mean, Baker Mayfield had a down season last year, but his name is E.E. Afton, who with all the pressure that's on him. So Joe Burrow, I feel the Bengals still may end up being the bottom of the division, but he can make it interesting moving forward. I give them a B+, A- on what they did, because they did try to address the needs that they needed throughout the team.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really good point, Ty. I definitely feel like when you look at the Cincinnati Bengals draft, you know, I'm like teetering. Like, I could totally see this team being an 8-8 team, and I could also see this team completely imploding. A lot of it, unfortunately, is going to ride on the rookie shoulders. And being that they don't have, they're probably going to be getting rid of Andy Dalton. You know, it's very unlikely.
Wait. Do you think they should? Do you think that's a good move for them to get rid of Andy Dalton or keep him?
Well, I think that they're going to – I think that they move him before the start of the season. That's my opinion. I think it would be a good idea to keep him.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm always of the opinion that it's better for a rookie to have somebody to learn from. Even if the guy doesn't want to physically show you how to do it, even if you're just visually watching how they go about their business, to have somebody to emulate, to model behavior, and obviously Andy Dalton is not somebody who gets into trouble. He's been a leader in that locker room for years. Yeah, does it make things uncomfortable? It can. But at the same time, you know, you're losing a lot of leverage when you look at the fact that you got a guy like Cam Newton still out there in free agency, and you have some of these other guys that are still available. So we'll see what happens with them. Matt, I want to come over to you and talk to you about the Cleveland Browns. And I got to tell you, man, I was actually – Cleveland fans are probably going to be shocked because I don't say this very often. I was actually really, really impressed with what this team did with their first couple picks. I thought they got a hell of a tackle in round one at pick 10, which was clearly and obviously their biggest need. They get Jedrick Willis, the dancing bear tackle from Alabama, come back. And a lot of people had this kid projected as a mid-20s pick. They come back at 44 and grab Grant Delpit, the safety from LSU. And then in the third round, they grabbed the big pass rushing linebacker, Jacob Phillips from LSU. What's your thoughts on the Cleveland Browns? I mean, they've made some moves this offseason. Do you think they're in a better position to compete for this division? And do you see them as a better team than 6-10 this year, Matt?
I like what they did. I think they got some good players. Like you said, it's kind of surprising to see Cleveland actually get a good draft grade on their draft picks. I'm just trying to go over who they got. You went over most of them. Looks like a linebacker, Jacob Phillips, should be a pleasant surprise. They went with the SEC. I really like what they did. They're going with what wins. The SEC wins. Cleveland went with reliable LSU and Alabama players this year. I give Cleveland, believe it or not, guys, I give them an A- in their draft pick. And, yes, I think they will beat 6-10 this year. I think you could see possibly 9-7.
Woo! Out of their breath.
And you know, one other thing of note, I know he's not in the top three, but a lot of people were talking about Harrison Bryant, the talented tight end from Florida Atlantic, as being one of the two or three best tight ends in his class. A lot of people were even talking about him as potentially being a late round two, early round three tight end. He slides all the way to round four. And with Njoku's injury history, this could be a big, big pickup for them. So we'll see how that plays out. James, I want to come over to you. We've talked about Cleveland. We've talked about Cincinnati. It's time to talk about the cream of this division, the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens, they finished 14-2 last year. A lot of people believe that, you know, the Baltimore Ravens really don't have a lot of holes. You know, a lot of people were saying, hey, they really just need an edge rusher to go along with Judon, and maybe potentially a middle linebacker to fill the hole that Mosley left when he left, and maybe an offensive guard. That's basically what every draft pundit or, you know, the people that write subscriptions have said. So when you look at what they've done in this draft, now keep in mind they were picking obviously at the very back of round one, but when you look and see what they did have several third-round picks. They actually had four. But round one, they get Patrick Queen, who a lot of people had as the number one linebacker right along there with Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma. Patrick Queen, the linebacker from LSU, is a little more raw, but I would say he's actually probably more athletic. J.K. Dobbins, the running back from Ohio State. Justin Madubuike, defensive tackle from Texas A&M, real big-bodied guy. I even heard some rumblings that he might be a back-of-the-first-round type guy. They get Devin Dunernay, wide receiver from Texas, Malik Harrison, linebacker from Ohio State, and then they come back and grab a guard in Tyree Phillips from Mississippi State. What's your thoughts on what Baltimore did in this draft?
See, people wonder why Baltimore continues to stay competitive year in and year out for the past, like, 20 years. It's because of Ozzie Newsome and how he does the draft. He hit best player available, position of need, round one. Of course, 20 years is hyperbole, but you know what I mean. J.K. Dobbins, while I'm worried about the mileage on those legs, you could argue that he's the best running back in this class, got him the back end of round two. Justin Madubuike, first round, upper second round defensive tackle, got him the back of the third. Malik Harrison, second round guy, potentially, back second round guy, got him at the tail end of the third. You keep on going and going through these picks. They're all projected to go higher than when the Baltimore Ravens drafted them. Sit tight, take the best players available, and eventually your team will mold itself around it. And that's what the Baltimore
James,
Ravens did. Arguably the best draft in this in the NFL this year.
James, real quick follow-up question on Baltimore. They take J.K. Dobbins in round two, which you've mentioned, a great player. But do you think grabbing him in round two is more of an indictment and more of a – is it going to take more carries away from Gus Edwards or more carries away from Mark Ingram?
Well, I do believe that – well, it's definitely going to take more away from Gus Edwards. I mean, let's be fair about that. I think Mark Ingram, while the age is there, they're going to do a running back by committee kind of thing in Baltimore to work with their star quarterback. So ultimately, I would not be surprised if all three of those guys got snaps and got carries.
All right. The last team in this division was the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Pittsburgh, as you know, Sirius, they did not have a first-round pick because they had already traded that pick to Miami for the services of Minka Fitzpatrick, which I don't think any Steeler fan is going to complain about. But they did have a second and a third-round pick. They got Chase Claypool, the talented wide receiver from Notre Dame, in round number two, and then came back with Alex Highsmith, the linebacker from Charlotte. I'm going to give it to you, Sirius. What's your thoughts on the two guys you got in the top 100, and how are they going to help? Is this team going to be a better team in 2020, or is this going to be a status quo from what we saw last year?
You know, man, to answer the last question, I think that all rests on the availability and the status of one Ben Roethlisberger. I honestly believe that if Seven is back to healthy and all signs look to be that he is going to be, I think the Chase Claypool pick makes tons of sense at that moment because, again, he's a 6'4 body, big catch radius. I actually had to do some homework on him on Friday because I had no idea who this guy was. But after doing my homework on him, 6'4 guy, ran a 4.40 at the combine. He's very much impressive. Catch radius, very good with combat catches. And if we move him to the outside, move Juju inside, James Washington on the other side, and we drafted Deontay Johnson last year, if you go 4 wide, it's very possible that we can make some significant noise in the AFC North. But that all rests on the arm of Big Ben. I mean, if Big Ben's not healthy, then we have another issue, which is why I'm actually frustrated with my own draft because you really didn't address the quarterback position like I thought we should have. We tried the Mason Rudolph experience. It didn't really work out like I thought. Doug Dodgers was an undrafted guy who saw significant snaps last year. It didn't work out, so I really felt as though we needed to address the quarterback position. I wanted Jalen Hurts. He was a pick later to my wife's team, which is the Eagles, so her and I had some words. But pick 102, the linebacker, Alex Highsmith. I love the pick. I really do love the pick, and if anybody's been following the Steelers' history, we tend to hit on wide receivers and linebackers with great success. So I did like the pick. I think he's going to come in, be a rotational guy, and get some snaps at special teams and really be a tremendous contributor to our effort moving forward. The other pick that I wanted to mention that we didn't go over was the pick number 124 in the fourth round. He picked up Anthony McFarland Jr., which is actually Booger's son. very good scat back type of guy who can hit the ground running out of Maryland. He played literally right behind me in my backyard. Saw a lot of him, so I was very happy about that particular pick. The only question that leaves me with is we have a loaded running back room right now with James Conner there.
Yep.
We drafted Benny Snell last year, Jalen Samuels a couple years ago. So we got a couple mouths to feed in that running back room. We've also been linked to a possibility of picking up Leonard Fournette via trade. So I'm not too sure what's going on with that running back room right now, but I do like the pickup of Anthony McFarland. I think he's going to come in and really be a tremendous contributor to our efforts as we try to maneuver around our dismal offensive performance from a season ago.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I would say, Sirius, and I think that, you know, I think as an objective fan, you could probably agree with this. The only issue I have with the Steelers draft, and granted, I think, you know, if you consider the first-round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick, then kudos. But the issue I have is when I look at the rest of this draft, I don't necessarily think there's anyone in this draft that's going to contribute day one. I don't see any starters. I don't think that even though he was drafted at number two overall, I don't see Chase Claypool being able to, you know, muscle out Deontay Johnson or James Washington or Juju Smith-Schuster. And so, you know, my thought is, you know, yeah, you drafted a lot of guys, but like you said, you know, you draft a running back at 124 and you just drafted two running backs in consecutive years at almost the exact same place. So we'll definitely have to wait and see how they're going to be implemented. But I wasn't overly impressed. I felt like there was some opportunities that may have been missed. Ty,
I
want to come over to you. Go ahead.
No, I said I definitely agree with you there.
Okay. Ty, I want to come over to you because I want to at least be able to get the AFC done today. We've already done the East. We've done the East, and we just did the North, so now we're moving to the South. And I want to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, especially leading up to the draft. I'd be the first one to tell you, Ty, and you know this, I don't think any team has gotten hammered more for the lead-up to the draft with some of the moves they've made, other than maybe the Texans, than the Jacksonville Jaguars. Some really odd moves they've made. You know, I've been very down on them. So what did the Jacksonville Jaguars do with their draft capital in order to show the fans that they are, you know, quote-unquote, in it to win it? They did. They made some moves. Number nine overall, maybe a little bit higher than some people expected, Ty. They took C.J. Henderson, cornerback from Florida. Most people believed in this draft, Ty, there was two quote-unquote man shutdown corners, you know, Okuda and Henderson. So kudos to them, you know, regardless of what you take him, if that's what you believe he is. Because as we know, in the last year, they've traded away both their starting corners. They come back and they get Chase on, linebacker LSU at number 20. In round two, they take the big, big body wide receiver, Chenault Jr. from Colorado. He's the one that kind of came up with a bit of a almost looked like a hamstring pull when he was running the 40 at the combine. And then in the third round, they take Devon Hamilton, the big defensive tackle from Ohio State. What was your thoughts on the Jacksonville Jaguars draft? And what does the draft tell you about where this team is headed?
So my favorite movie of all time, if people are going to laugh, I'm a comedy guy, right? My favorite movie of all time is Harlem Nights, right? And the best part of the movie is when Della Reese and Eddie Murphy get ready to get after it. Eddie Murphy said, "Oh, so you want to fight? You want to fight?" So with that being said, I was up here picking on the Jags and thought that they were folding up shop, didn't care about nothing, and it was like they heard us here in the kitchen, and they addressed everything that they needed. They went out and got a wealth of corners, so at least that they're going to have a cornerback battle and try to fill the holes that they had with Bouye. A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey leaving. And then they also, and me being biased, and this is me being biased, but it's the truth. I'm not lying. They picked up an instant starter in Shaquille Quarterman. This guy is a stud at linebacker. I was begging for Detroit to get him. I was hoping Detroit got him. He fell right back at home in the Florida. This is a huge pickup in the fourth round for them at the linebacker position. And they addressed at least the wide receiver position so they could try and keep pieces there. But I think that they addressed that defense to at least try to be stout enough to compete in a competitive AFC South. I give them B plus A minus on this grade because they addressed everything that they did need. And this is what I was hoping, like a lot of the teams, including the team that I like, addressed. And they did that all across the board.
All right, good stuff. James, you got the Indianapolis Colts. As most people know, they did not have a first-round pick as they traded that to the Niners for DeForest Buckner, Pro Bowl defensive tackle. They did have 2 seconds and a third, though, and in round two, at pick number 34, they took Michael Pittman, the big, long wide receiver from USC, came back and took Jonathan Taylor, running back from Wisconsin, who turned in the surprising sub-4.5 time at the combine. And then in round three, they took Julian Blackman, the safety from Utah. So they took a couple playmakers. They got themselves a stud defensive tackle in the trade with the Niners. What's your thoughts on the Indianapolis Colts as a whole, and are they ready to compete for this division?
Well, they've been ready to compete for this division for a long time. But what this draft really tells me is not the story is not in the first three picks. It's in the fourth round pick, taking Jacob Eason, the quarterback out of Washington. This tells me that they are ready to move on from Jacoby Brissett. You don't take somebody to go over them and somebody to go under him and not expect that guy to be still in the building and in the conversation. I would not be surprised if by the time the NFL season starts that Jacoby Brissett is not a New England Patriot. As far as the other guys are concerned, Jonathan Taylor is another one of those guys who are in that top tier, that grouping of guys that you could take one over the other. My personal preference was he was probably the third best running back in the class, but definitely worth it for one of the very few weak points that the Indianapolis Colts had. Michael Pittman, they needed somebody to be the eventual successor to T.Y. Hilton. His teeth aren't getting any shorter, let's put it that way. So this was a good pick. It was, I think it was a little bit of a reach for need, which personally I don't like to see top teams do, but sometimes it's got to be done. Overall, it was basically, you know, your solid run-of-the-mill beep draft.
All right, Matt, I'm going to come over to you. The Houston Texans, they've made a lot of moves this offseason and even going back into last season. They didn't have a first-round pick as they traded that last year to the Dolphins for Laramie Tunsil, which helped them make the playoffs, and they made him the highest-paid offensive tackle now. In round two, they took Ross Blaylock, the big defensive tackle from TCU, who a lot of people thought might be a first-round pick, and then came back in round three and took Jonathan Grenard, the linebacker from Florida. What is your thoughts on the Houston Texans, not only their draft, but what they've done this offseason? They traded some players away, like DeAndre Hopkins, and brought in some guys with their draft. Are they a better team now than the team that made the playoffs last year at 10-6?
If you think you're going to replace DeAndre Hopkins with a guy from Rhode Island as their fifth round pick, I think you're out of your mind. I'm going to give these guys a C, and it's probably a C-. I know they were thinned out. Like you said, they traded their pick. I don't think they're better with the loss of Hopkins. I know they needed that offensive tackle you're talking about, and that was big, but I don't see the Texans improving based off this draft class. Your thoughts, breaking news, Brian Hughes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I actually think you make some points here. So my biggest problem with this is, and this is something that we'll talk a little bit with the Niners pick, next week, is anytime you lose a stud player and you replace that stud player with another player at the same position, is it really a net gain or a net loss for the next year? Because you really have to look year to year when you're a playoff team. So Ross Blaylock, most people, you know, inside the DraftNik community would tell you that Ross Blaylock, although he's big, is probably one of the two or three best pass-rushing defensive tackles in the entire draft. You know, everybody talks about Derek Brown, everybody talks about Kinlaw, but Blaylock is a fantastic pass rusher. The problem is you just let DJ Reader walk out your building, and he was probably one of the four or five best defensive tackles last year. I'm not saying always, but last year. So I don't know if that's necessarily a net positive. And then when you start making decisions like you mentioned, like letting Hopkins go and some of the other decisions they've made, it kind of makes me feel like they're definitely going to take a step back next year. And I think that some of the other teams in this division have actually gotten better. So, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, you have to look at. Sirius, I'm going to come over to you. Tennessee Titans. This is the team that, you know, although they didn't win the division last year, the Tennessee Titans were the team that actually made it the furthest in this division, making it all the way to the AFC Championship games. And a lot of people thought that this team was pretty complete as it was, being that they had, you know, such a good offensive and defensive line. So when you look at the Tennessee Titans, one of the things that I think really stood out last year was obviously their ability to run the ball and to run the ball effectively. But one thing they really, really lacked was an offensive tackle. Jack Conklin basically took off and, you know, skipped town and went over to Cleveland, which leaves a huge hole. And they, you know, they obviously had a glaring need at, you know, at running back. At quarterback. So with that said, Sirius, what was your thoughts on the draft itself? They took Isaiah Wilson, tackle from Georgia, in round one. And I'll be honest, maybe you guys know more about him than I do, but I have not seen a ton of people projecting him in the top 50. So I'm assuming he's probably more of a guard than a tackle, but I'm not sure. And then Christian Fulton, the cornerback from LSU, is a darn good corner that they picked up in the second round. And then they came back in round three inside the top 100 and took Darrington Evans, the running back from Appalachian State. What's your thoughts on their draft, their offseason, and are they now the team to beat in this division?
You know, honestly, I'm going to say this, like I said about a couple other teams we spoke about. It all, for me, rests upon the arms of their quarterback. I mean, if Ryan Tannehill can continue to make that leap and not hurt the team, but help the team, I think they're going to be really the team to beat. I did like the second-round pick, Christian Fulton, out of LSU. This is a guy who I watched a significant amount of last year, and he literally he's always around the football. He makes the plays. He's instinctual. He sees it, reads it, goes and gets it. And that's what you really need out of a defensive player. The offensive lineman from Georgia that they picked, Isaiah Wilson, I do agree with you, Brian. According to everything that I've seen mock-wise for the past 2.5-3 months, I had him as a late second, early third-round pick. And Mike Vrabel, you know, decided to reach and go there, you know, to each of her own. I like the idea of picking up a running back in the third round. I guess the idea would be to add some sort of smash and dash type of a running back duo with Derrick Henry, who they, you know, we're all aware of the fact that they franchise tagged him and everything like that. So as far as the Tennessee Titans are concerned, I think the bulk of their work was done to improve their team a season ago, picking up A.J. Brown and things that they did to acquire Tannehill and going that significant run. So I guess, you know, for lack of better words, because the teams in the division are doing so much to lose the division, I think the Tennessee Titans, you know, by default step forward and possibly 10-6 to win this division, and we'll see what happens when they get into the bands. But I wasn't a fan of the draft haul this past weekend.
All right, Mr. TP Timeless, we're on to the AFC West, and I can't think of a team better to start with than the Los Angeles Chargers, picking right there in the just outside of the top 10 or top 5, excuse me, sitting there at pick number 6, and the third quarterback off the board was Justin Herbert, quarterback from Oregon. They come back towards the tail end of round 1 and take Kenneth Murray, the linebacker from Oklahoma. And then they came back in the fourth round and took Joshua Kelly, the running back from UCLA. What was your thoughts on the Chargers draft? I mean, just based off the position, it seems like they hit their three biggest needs. But what's your thoughts? And are the Chargers going to be a team that can contend next year with the other teams in the AFC West?
I think they'll be very interesting. I think with the loss of Melvin Gordon, that's why they went after a running back. I am completely pissed off that Justin Herbert was able to slip and go to the Chargers, man. I wanted him so bad. He's a big, tall guy that he's agile and can make throws down the field. He can run. He stands in the pocket. He can make those passes. I think this is a big draft for them. I give them a solid B plus, A minus, because they also went after receiver two to help Keenan Allen. So I think they filled the void with Rivers leaving. So even if Herbert has competition at the quarterback position, they're all right. They picked up a running back and some receivers, too, to kind of shell the offense. I think the defense can come around. They still have some of the pillar pieces there. So I think offense was the need that they had, and they did a good job. I'll give the Chargers a A-minus, B-plus in this draft.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, basically the Chargers, outside of their ability to stop the run, which obviously Kenneth Murray should help with, they were basically a top five unit almost in every statistical category, total yards, passing yards, you know, everything except for rush yards and points allowed. And if you can't stop the rush, as you guys know, you're not going to be able to prevent people from putting up points. But I digress. So, James, I'm going to come back over to you. Same division. The team that was actually supposed to be hosting the draft, the Las Vegas Raiders, they really missed out on opportunity, I think. Not them per se, but, you know, not the community per se, but the Raiders to be able to show off that new stadium, to be able to get people excited in the area. But the Raiders had two first-round picks. Round 1, pick number 12, they took Henry Ruggs, which I do think it's worth noting that they took Ruggs with both Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb still on the board, just for those of you that are interested in that kind of stuff. Came back in round 1, pick 19, and took Damon Arnett, the talented corner from Ohio State. And then no round 2 picks, James, but they did have three round 3 picks. They took Lynn Bowden Jr., the wide receiver from Kentucky, and went back-to-back as they took another wide receiver with the next pick, Brian Edwards, wide receiver from South Carolina, and then they took Tanner Muse, the safety from Clemson, towards the end there of round 3, and that was the last pick they had, the top 100. What do you think about the Raiders and with the draft class they've had, with the offseason they've had, James, is this team ready to compete in this division now and really make a push to make the playoffs?
I think they're ready to make a push towards the playoffs. Henry Ruggs is super fast, super talented, actually has really good hands, which is something that is usually lacking in these super high-speed wide receivers that seem to come out every year. But after Henry Ruggs III, it's hard to find a really good pick. Damon Arnett was a fourth or fifth round pick in my estimation. Like, this was a terrible pick. He's a guy with attitude problems and is not nearly talented enough to back that up. That's who Damon Arnett is. The one guy I'm really interested in out of this draft class outside of Henry Ruggs is Lynn Bowden. Because he actually played quarterback out of Kentucky. And so this is a guy that can play all three positions, but isn't particularly good at any of them. But he could definitely be used in a lot of really interesting trick plays. And I think that might add a little wrinkle to that Las Vegas Raiders offense that was kind of missing before. One guy that wasn't mentioned that I do want to give a shout-out to is John Simpson. In my opinion, the second-best guard in the class. If you count Hunt, who really played left tackle, but is transitioning to guard, John Simpson in round four, I think, was a fantastic pick, trading up with the Lions, grabbing Lions picked in round three.
Hello?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was a good pick. Just real quick on what you had mentioned, I was actually talked to a former general manager, and because I had similar question about Arnett, and I said, "What do you think of the Arnett pick? And is it a good pick?" And he told me for a comp, Marcus Peters. So that's pretty high praise. He said he's got that kind of instincts. He's very athletic. If they can keep him in check, he is going to be fantastic. So we'll see.
And the exact same personality issues. I wouldn't touch him.
Well, like I said, you know what? Corners are hard to come by, as we all know. So there's a reason like a guy like Marcus Peters gets paid big bucks. It's because he can cover. So it's just worth noting. He's not a horrible corner. Sirius, I want to come over to you and get your thoughts on the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos, it's kind of funny because right before the draft, if you guys remember last week, I told you there was a report out that Denver said, John Elway said, listen, he said, we're going to be able to get the number one wide receiver on our board without trading up. And everybody was like, oh, he's full of it. There's zero chance that's going to happen. This is all fodder. And lo and behold, and they're saying that he was the number one wide receiver on their board, but in round one, Sirius, they were able to get Jerry Jeudy at pick 15 without having to trade up. Supremely talented route runner, came back at pick 46 and get KJ Hamler, the wide receiver from Penn State. And then they had three third round picks. They get a really, really talented physical corner from Iowa. I apologize, but I cannot pronounce that last name. They get a really talented center in Lloyd Quisenberry III from LSU. And he's a really, really solid center. A lot of people had him rated right there with Ruiz as the top center in this class. And then they get McTelvin again, the defensive tackle from Arkansas. So what's your thoughts on this class, specifically Jerry Jeudy not having to trade up, and does Denver have enough now to potentially compete with Kansas City in this division, Sirius?
You know, honestly, I posted this on my Facebook the day of the draft. I apologize, Mr. Elway. I was one of the guys on this very airways last week that called you a clown for saying that you were able to get not only a number one receiver, but your number one receiver without having to make any type of movements. And lo and behold, you get, in my opinion, arguably one of the best route runners and one of the best receivers in this class in Jerry Jeudy. I'm completely shocked by that move. So it's kudos to Mr. Elway and that whole coaching staff for being able to, you know, to stay pat and get your guy. For my own biased reasons, I love, 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 love the pick in the second round as a Penn State fan. KJ Hamler paired with Jerry Jeudy, and you got Courtland Sutton out there. They're going to be able to make some noise at the wide receiver position. I'm not a fan of their quarterback, but whatever the case may be, it's not like John Elway has made any type of leeway on the quarterback position since he's been there, but I digress. I love this draft for the Denver Broncos. I really do. They didn't have to do a lot of moving around to get what they needed. I think they got in, got out, addressed the needs that they had. And again, they didn't have to maneuver up to go get him, man. I love Jerry Jeudy. I love that pick up there. All signs, he could have been a top five pick. And Mason just laid there and got him, and then to come back and get you know, KJ Hamler from Penn State, who and the scat type of guy can help you out on punt return, giving the ball in space and watch him work. It's going to be fun to watch that tandem out there work and grow together along with Sutton. So I like the pick.
All right, Ty, I'm going to come over to you for the last team and the reigning Super Bowl champs, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, a lot of people would say this team, when you looked at them in the Super Bowl and their run up to the Super Bowl, would probably say that this team didn't really have many needs as they kind of just run ruckshot through everybody. But, you know, a lot of people, including Sports City's own Norm Arendis, said, you know, they need to get better defensively at corner and linebacker, and that he'd like to see an upgrade at running back. Well, ask and you shall receive. Round one, pick 32, Ty. They take Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back from LSU. A lot of people were saying, you know, and this is the whole, you know, do you like apples or oranges? You know, I like Swift, but a lot of people were saying Helaire is the best running back in this class. And then they come back in round two and take Willie Gay Jr., the linebacker from Mississippi State. Super agile, super athletic, can cover. And then they get Lucas Niang in the tackle from TCU inside the top 100. What's your thoughts on Kansas City's draft? And do you think they've done enough this offseason and obviously having Pat Mahomes to position themselves for another Super Bowl run?
Okay, I'm going to address what you said defensively. I think that this will kind of like work its way in because they went after a safety and they're kind of cool right now at the safety position with Honey Badger being in now. So I think they'll kind of like work together also with Zacharius Keys on a cornerback position. So at least a bookend situation in the secondary. I think they'll work well with the communication because Honey Badger came there with an instant impact. So with that being said, defensively, I feel like they're okay. I feel like Willie Gay coming out of the SEC is a huge pickup. At least he can learn on the fly. I don't put too much on him because the AFC West is a passing division. So the running game, if they run into those running systems, they'll be able to work their way with the linebacker. Of course, I think he's fine for the first year or two. Then once they start to put the pressure on him defensively. But it's not fair that here we go again with a running back like Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to a coach like Andy Reid. I look at this situation with him looking like a stronger, stouter version of Brian Westbrook. He's not as fast as Westbrook, but I feel like he has that material to get stay low, kind of like a C.J. Anderson. He's strong, he's stout, and coming from LSU as a winning pedigree, I feel like that's a big pickup for the Chiefs, and let alone he don't even got to do much because – those defenses are worried about the outfield. They're out of the box. They're not worried about the box. Oh, he's going to see a lot of five to six-man fronts. He's not going to see seven. He's not. A lot of those defenses are worried about Tyreek taking the doors off the hinges. So that's an unfair pick first round. That's big, especially with the Andy Reid caliber coaching. Like this that's huge for his style of running.
All right, boys, so we're going to go to the four-minute drill now. This is we're trying to close this show out. As you know, we got to run the ball a little bit. We got to pick up some first downs. So, Matt, I'm going to come to you first. What was your favorite moment in the draft and or favorite pick in the first round?
Very good question. Breaking news, Brian Hughes. Man, surprisingly, my favorite moment was maybe when they were showing Tua. They showed his family, and they showed him getting drafted, and it's a pretty cool moment just to see him. I know I followed him religiously in college because, you know, he had that great win against Georgia and screwed up everybody around here. So that was a cool moment for me. And I did actually think that when they showed each team's fans on the screen, there was, about 16 different little screenshots of each fan. And it was pretty cool. I mean, considering we didn't even really have a draft this year, guys, I mean, it's just sad, you know, that we had to come to this. Basically, everything is virtual now. But overall, I liked it. And like I said, I liked the special. But I did like the stuff about Joe Burrow, too. I think they did a good ESPN and did a good job on Joe Burrow and Tua, just showing kind of, you know, where they came from. And just the stories were pretty cool with those two. So I look for both of them probably to make an impact this year. We'll see what happens, guys. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed. I always learn a lot from all of y'all. So hope everyone has a good night.
Thanks, Matt. I definitely appreciate you. Appreciate you stopping by, and we'll see you again next week. I'm going to go on over to James. James, similar question, but with a slight twist. Everybody is talking about, you know, the quote-unquote sexy drafts, who did the best. What do you think, in your opinion, what was one of, if not in your opinion, the best, what was one of the most underrated drafts in this class? Or you could take the opposite, which is who drafted that was just absolutely awful?
Oh, the absolutely awful draft was easily the Green Bay Packers. Easily. This is a team that didn't prepare. This is a team that went to the NFC Championship game a season ago and did nothing to improve their team. They took a second-round quarterback in round one. They took a fifth-round running back in round two, and everything continues to get worse from there. I think their best pick was John Runyon's kid, taking him in the fourth or fifth round. The Green Bay Packers were so far beyond the pale. Like, it's almost impossible for somebody to get an F in an NFL draft grade. But the Green Bay Packers have found a way to do it. And this is not going to be like the Seattle Seahawks of a few years ago when they took Russell Wilson and they took a few other guys who ended up sticking on the team and ended up being like an above average draft overall. No, this is the Green Bay Packers. They did nothing to help them immediately. Long term, I will be surprised if in Jordan Love's first contract, he ends up starting any games that Aaron Rodgers is not injured. So the fact that they drafted him in the first round is absolutely spellbinding to me. But I will happily get into that next week when we hit the NFC, because I've got a lot more to say about that. But one guy I do want to give a little shout-out to just before I go that we didn't mention, and this is Gabriel Davis, the fourth-round wide receiver taken by the Buffalo Bills. I think this is a guy that everybody needs to keep an eye out for. He had an amazing combine performance. I think that's going to slide him into some serious play time at the next level.
All right, I appreciate you, James. Thank you very much. We always definitely appreciate you. Sirius, there were several trades in this year's draft. And if you need, you know, I can give you some of the big ones, but of all the trades that went down, this year, in your opinion, what was the best trade, of this year, whether it was to move up to get a player, whether it was, to acquire a veteran, what, in your opinion, what was the best mm-hmm. trade this year for the team and why?
You know what? I'm going to save this for next week. I was, but since you brought it up, man, I really like what the 49ers were able to do to get the veteran Trent Williams from Washington. I mean, you lose a premier Hall of Famer who is retired, and you give the Washington Redskins a phone call, and you are able to get Trent Williams from Washington for pretty much, you know, a bag of Pringles and a Snapple, for lack of a better phrase. So kudos to Mr. Shanahan and Mr. Lynch for being able to find a way to make that deal happen. I think arguably, you know, that was the best move to help a team that can win right now, as far as the trade is concerned. So shout out to you guys for that. Anyways, man, it's your boy, man. It's been a pleasure kicking in with you guys, man. Lord willing, we'll be back here next week. We'll run over to NFC. I got a lot to talk about. From the NFC standpoint, it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun, man. Come see us next week.
Chai, I left the best for you, man. This was the first and possibly only virtual draft ever. What was your favorite moment of this virtual draft as we get Sports City out of here tonight. What was your favorite moment from this draft, and what would you remember about this virtual draft moving forward?
I'm not too thrilled with, you know, everything that happened, you know, like virtually wise. I mean, it was just one instance with Trey Young's former girlfriend, and now she's the girlfriend of another guy that's going into the league. I think it might have been CeeDee Lamb. Now he's messing with her, and she tried to take his phone. I don't know whether to be nosy to look through the phone book or to look to see the draft. But it's like, girl, would you sit? Like, I seen his. Okay, so you got to look at the whole thing. You got to look at his sister, right? His sister looked at her with that grill like, wait, you need to calm down because we on ESPN. And he snatched his phone back at her like, girl, please not right now. And he shook his head some more like, yo, I can't believe you're trying to do this right now. Like, right now? Huh?
Hey, Ty, not to break in, but I just want to say real quick because I think it's important. That was actually my favorite moment. The best part of the whole thing is that CeeDee Lamb is on one phone, and he never even makes eye contact. He's just like, nope, and just rips it back from her.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? okay, so look, either she's going to look at the text that he might have gotten from the team, or she's looking for drama to set it off on TV or make that day bad. It's like, yo, don't make this about yourself. The funny thing is a draft, when Russell Wilson got drafted and you see his girlfriend at that time, she's screaming like she hit the lotto and she's no longer a part of the picture. I hope that same thing happened to homegirl if she started some crap like that. Now, you know, I look at my creators, and I'm going to do this quickly. Like, one, I'm mad at Ladies First, my mother's team. I feel like they had one of the best drafts. My mom is a Vikings fan. And with them adding Jefferson to the Vikings, I cannot wait to talk about that. And then my father, being a diehard Redskins fan, just looking at the Chase Young situation and watching how Chase Young – I didn't know Chase Young was not only from the Maryland area, but he's a diehard Redskins fan, and he went to the Redskins. And it made – I got goosebumps when I saw that. And my father's a diehard Redskins fan, so it's like it gave me something to, like, well up my eyes and smile a little bit about. So that was fun. So just like you said, we'll talk about the NFC, but I give credit to Minnesota. We'll talk about that. I'll dig into that for the Chase Young situation, and it meant something because his grandfather's picture was up and he was a Redskins fan. It was a family thing, and I felt that family vibe. So that was that to me. But on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Well, that's all the time we have here with the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. I want to take a moment to thank Matt, TP Timeless, James, Sirius for joining me on the first ever NFL draft review here on the NFL Free-for-All Show recap. We've done things a little differently in the past where we'd go pick by pick just through suggestions and comments that I've gotten back from you guys. I hope you enjoy this preview and the opinions of all the different people. Everybody here is super knowledgeable. So I hope you appreciate the feedback. As all the guys said, next week we're going to dive into the NFC. I don't want to do too much because we do still have a long time till football, and I want to make sure that we give each team their just due. So I really appreciate everybody tuning in. Please check out our website at www.sportscitychefs.com. We have news, blogs, player interviews that you guys might find interesting, as well as original content. We have other shows available. Check out our other probably most popular show, the Sunday Morning Brunch. They typically do a basketball show. Right now it's kind of difficult with basketball kind of being in limbo. But I just want to say thank you to everybody that continues to support us. We do appreciate it. And as Ty said, tell a friend to tell a friend it's the Chefs again. And if you didn't know, now you know. New York, Jersey, 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 Jersey.